Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, hello. How are you there? Episode 32 of Falling Forward with Dan Lesac. Look at that. How are you all doing? I hope you are well, staying safe. Stay indoors, as they say, out there on the streets. Wait, no, out there in the houses. So who's this week's guest? It is the lovely Jason Reed of the Stop and Search podcast of UK Leap. And now of a brand new podcast, So I Start a Revolution from my bed. Jason suffers from ME, so obviously has lived a fairly isolated time. He's married and stuff and all that, but you know what I mean. Can't get out as much. So it's kind of a podcast about coping strategies and just, you know, things that might actually help us during this hot new virus everyone's talking about. So I got him on because I wanted to talk about that. And then we forgot to talk about that because, you know, I'm not a professional podcaster. So I then had to hurriedly record 10 minutes about that at the end, which I've helpfully tacked at the start of the podcast because some of you get bored real quick, don't you, and hang up. So just making sure you people get marketed to. It's a good one this week. It's way more political than we usually get. We usually get a bit of politics, but I think, yeah, some of you are going to be like, wait, Dan's a socialist. Yeah, that's a thing. But yeah, I hope you enjoy it. Like I said, I had to edit it in a bit of a funny way, so it might seem a bit odd, but that's why it had to be. Oh, and you might notice there's no stings this week. I can't find them, those little audio files. It's patreon.com things. So, yeah, I'll just say them out loud. If you like the music, danlesac.bandcamp.com. If you want to support the podcast directly, that's patreon.com/danlesac. Yeah, that's all you need to know. Oh, rate and review. Rate, comment and subscribe and all that. And that would be greatly appreciated. Is that all I've got to say? Yes, for once. For once, guys, that is all I've got to say. Hope you're enjoying this one. Make sure you check out Jason's podcasts, plural. I'll just go. No, I won't. The other thing... the other thing is... keep an eye on Jason's So I Start a Revolution from My Bed podcast, because I'm a guest on there. I'm not sure when it comes out, but we recorded it straight after recording this one. And I'm going to be honest, it's better than this one. We had a lot of fun. Yeah, I haven't been a guest on something for a while. So, yeah, I felt somewhat nervous. But we had a lot of japes and japery, I think is the correct term. Now I'll get out of the way.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So we've started now, and we have to fake like we started.
Right. But it's like quantum leap.
But I'm leaving this bit in so they know, okay?
Right.
How are you? Double podcaster now.
Yes, I've got, for some reason, I've got two. One of them I've been doing for the last 4 years, thanks to Scroobius Pip, who, when he had me on his podcast and we spoke about the Culture High, the films that I've done, he then afterwards said, "Do you fancy doing a podcast on the war on drugs?" So I was like, yeah, totally. So that was when we formed Stop and Search. Mm. And bizarrely, it won two British Podcast Awards in 2018, which was just mind-blowing because we was up against Blue Planet.
Yeah.
We beat Blue Planet.
Yeah, Attenborough's got enough awards, though. He's fine.
Yeah. I like to think that I've got a better voice than Attenborough as well.
Get out.
And like I said, I've made this joke loads of times now, so if anybody does follow my work, they've heard this a million times. But because I've won those two awards for essentially talking, which is just bizarre because my cognitive function is terrible because of the illness, I always bring up in arguments with my other half that no matter what she says, I can always throw it at her that I'm an award-winning talker.
Yeah.
And that instantly makes me a complete twat. But it nevertheless never fails to wind her up. So that's always a bonus. So yeah, we won Smartest Podcast Silver and Best Current Affairs, I think it was.
Nice.
So we've got these little laurels on our podcast now. It's just, again, it's just crazy that we got recognised to that degree. And it's generally humbling. I make a joke of it, but it's just so nice to know that you get some recognition, because the podcasts that we produce on Stop and Search are so varied from famous people like Rufus Hale, Marcus Brigstock. Marcus has been on your show.
Marcus has been on mine. I think mine was better.
Yeah, totally.
Just you know. Yeah. But yeah.
Marcus was so open. He went into like porn addiction and food addiction, eating out of a bin and things like that. And I can't thank people enough like that, that are that degree of open, that they can share that. What they
it's really interesting to see in this age where you could get, whether be cancelled by the internet or not asked to come back on TV shows, to then actually be open about stuff, you know. It is really interesting.
And one of the other ones that was just mind-blowing was Ian Lee gave us the most beautiful interview because of what he's been through with addiction. And he came third in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And when he came out of the jungle, what he went through in that period, he was so open with us on that. And there's a friend of mine called Secret Drug Addict that, again, is just, he worked with Oasis. He was there for Britpop at the very epicenter. And he's just such a fascinating guy. And going about his addiction and what he went through is just, you know, you learn so much. And then you get ones like the fact that we produced the first podcast in Parliament, which is just, again, incredible, which I don't think you're actually supposed to do. It's only because we've got good allies. When you go through Parliament, you go through so many security checks and you have to put in a list of your equipment beforehand. You know, no visual equipment, because that's definitely forbidden.
Yeah.
So I think we kind of got into a bit of a grey area with it, but we've done two there now and potentially another one on the way, if we're still functioning as a society by then because of corona. But also we should be doing one in the House of Lords at some point as well, which is going to be
the comfier seats.
Yeah, it was nice and red. That's the difference. You've got the green of the Commons and the red of the Lords. That's how you differentiate. So yeah, that's what we're doing on Stop and Search. Yeah.
But we're going to talk a lot about Stop and Search and your work with Leap in a minute. But so what is your new podcast?
Yeah, so the new one was formulated quite quickly because I started on social media realising that there's a lot of people struggling with isolation and just being cut off from the world. So because of my circumstances of being housebound predominantly for the last 30 years, I think I've done all right within that surrounding. You know, I've, in the trailer of this new one called So I Start a Revolution from My Bed, I say that I've not yet been caught barking at trees or trying to catch squirrels. And I think that my mental health has been about as stable as it can be.
Mm.
So how can we try and get a broader conversation of coping mechanisms and trying to get to grips with what it's like being on our own, cut off from society? What can we do to have fun within that, and the various different ways of being, I don't like using the word, but mindfulness.
Mm.
You know, what can we do to improve?
Why don't you like using that word, though? It's a good word. It means what it means.
I think it's become one of those words that's been a bit co-opted. It gets used in a lot of, I mean, bless her, my other half is who's upstairs trying to be quiet. She's got a lot of magazines that are a little bit woo for my liking. And again, whatever it takes, I'm by no means knocking anyone's belief system. And I genuinely mean that.
Mm.
Because if you look over to my shoulder, I've got all kinds of crystals behind me which light up. I'm not a crystal person, but I believe in the nice visuals and setting the scene and things like that.
Yeah.
I've got amethyst tea light holders, which are just so gorgeous when they light up.
But yeah, there's definitely whatever you believe, like there is nothing more calming than a tidy room with somewhere comfortable to sit,
yeah.
You know, and something nice to look at, you know. Like the reason why a lot of meditation rituals and stuff have flames in them is because there is a hypnotic element to that.
That's the perfect example, is water, flames, all these elements that are...
They don't work together.
I don't know. Anything's possible in Vegas.
Steam.
You know that. Yes. Steam. There's that.
So the new podcast is kind of getting into coping mechanisms and different people's approaches to that.
And looking at people's private lives. So we've... The first proper episode went out this week with Johan Hari, who's a friend of mine and a journalist. And we've labelled it In Bed with Johan Hari, because it's about private lives. What happens when the door shuts? How do you relax? And I always say to people, don't squander your relaxation. Don't sit on the sofa with the phone in your hand, flicking through the channels, and then wasting 3 hours, and then you've got to go to bed. Set yourself up for it. You would set yourself up to go into the cinema. You'd get popcorn and drink. You'd possibly be dressed up. You've got the ambient smells around you. Do that in your own home.
With people doing like dress up at home, like people doing Zoom call pub nights and stuff. It is actually like, okay, this situation we're in, which we're going to talk about more throughout the rest of the podcast, because I keep forgetting we're recording this at the end, but it's the start.
We've quite looped it.
It's very, very confusing. But like this new normal, we can still have fun. We can, if we put in the effort, we can make the most of this difficult situation.
And situations like this quite often give you a perspective.
Mm.
So we've been cut off, so therefore we're starting to miss things. We're starting to, some people might miss the pub, you know, I personally don't. I find pubs horrible.
Yeah, I just shrugged. I'm very, couldn't give a fuck.
And then you've got people that are missing the cinema, you've got people that are missing going for a walk at the beach. They're going to come back to us. We're going to have those moments. So when you do get back to them, appreciate them as you're going through them. But also, you can have appreciation in your memory. You know, really relive that, vividly bring it back, make that a point of comfort. And that's what we don't necessarily do enough, because the average person is so channeled on what they're doing. They've got the luxury of time and energy, mostly. When you haven't got that, you do find yourself having a different perspective of savouring things more. And what I term my illness as is like you've got a budget. So just as the same as you may have a £20 note to go out and spend on a night, with my energy levels, I may have £5 to go out and spend on a night. So therefore, what can I do to maximise that? And what can I do to bring stuff away and have that as a memory as well?
Yeah.
And that's what I think the average person is starting to understand now of, okay, let's really appreciate life. You know, let's work at what matters.
It's very similar to the sponge analogy with creativity. Mm. Like creativity, your creativity is a sponge, and the way you fill that sponge is by enjoying life and fine foods and relaxation and movies and all the things people do for entertainment is how you fill that sponge up. And then when you're being creative, you're squeezing all the liquid joy out of that into your work. But there is always a point at which that sponge is empty. And when everyone's saying, oh, you should write a sonnet. Yeah, King Lear. Yeah. Shakespeare wrote King Lear. Wow. Shakespeare had like all the money sorted. His rent was paid. He had patrons and stuff. And King Lear's a ripoff of a story in the newspaper of the day anyway. But, you know, yeah, we can all do it. And it's, well, no, you can't. Because you can't fill that sponge up without all the joy to go into it. So then squeeze out again. Milk life out of your sponge of creativity. It was a good analogy. I read it on the internet. Okay, right. Listeners, we're going to now jump back to what would be the start of the recording, but isn't the start of the podcast, because we forgot a thing, okay? So this might be a bit jarring, but we're going to edit and then go.
I'm off.
It was really good because the internet crapped out for a second, so it was like, I'm pressing record now, I'm off.
I like to think me and Steve Jobs worked that little joke out.
Yeah, he's dead now.
Oh no.
Yeah, they killed him.
That's Bill Gates, him and his vaccines.
That Bill Gates, right, everyone talks, he was on the BBC this morning, and he comes across like he's a goodie, but he's not. He's a baddie. Well, maybe he's somewhere in between. He's not quite a baddie. But, like, they were talking about Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And that's cool and all. They put all that money aside to, like, save the world or whatever. But they reinvest that money in, like, Warren Buffett's hedge fund to keep that topped up. Right. And obviously, Warren Buffett's hedge fund is in, like, ExxonMobil, is in McDonald's, all that. It's like, ah, so not strictly good then, guys.
You do find that with, like, there's this inherent aspect. And I do know a couple of billionaires, and I don't want to kind of besmirch their reputation. Yeah, just a couple. But the thing is, it's like, if you've got that amount of money, if you're a billionaire, chances are you're not as philanthropic as what your reputation precede you, because you shouldn't have that amount of money.
Yeah, to become a billionaire, to turn, if you imagine it, like if someone gives you a pound and says, right, you have to survive off that and turn it into £1,000, just physically impossible. You couldn't do it. The only way you could do that is to like buy a £1 knife and mug someone for more money. And that's what happens. Like, I don't think like billionaires start out with this evil intent in mind. But I think as time goes on, you start to see humans as commodities, and you pay them for what they're worth to you, not what it costs them to survive. And part of the reason why nurses get paid so little and footballers get paid so much, because footballers generate vast sums of money for a football club. So they get paid a share of that vast sums. Nurses don't generate any money for anyone, so they don't get paid, which is completely unfair, but it is also capitalism working as intended.
And also, just it reflects our value system, because as you said, you know, we value people on a pitch kicking a ball, but not the people that are saving our lives. And it's because we've formulated the monetary system is almost like another element that we need. So we need oxygen, we need water. And if this crisis is teaching us anything at the moment, the next one is going to be the economy. And, you know, I've got people around me going, oh, we're doomed because of the economy. It's like, we're doomed if our water supply is no longer functioning, or all of a sudden our oxygen is pulled out of the world. That's where you're doomed. Anything else you can problem solve. It's not a chemical element that we need. This is a man-made construct. And it's going to be really hippie to say that, because your people are going to go, oh, you're so naive. But why? This is a fundamental.
Where the flaws in the system are being shown are also showing us how we as individuals can do things to fill those gaps. So when you've got people 3D printing PPE, that's not a thing that should happen in a sensible society that's working correctly. They shouldn't need to do that. But the fact is, if the economy goes to shit and, I don't know, we need people to run the water purification plant, humanity will fill that gap, whether money is involved or not. Mm. And I know that sounds quite hippy-dippy, and we shouldn't be in that situation. If we're going to build a house of cards, let's try to build a stable one. But, yeah, us as individuals aren't as selfish as maybe, not we like to think, but that the evidence before now would show us.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And that's where, I mean, the realms that I work in, you do deal with the most vulnerable in society. So people on disability benefits who have just been through such a rigmarole over the last 5, 6, 7 years because of what the cuts have been doing.
Mm.
And it just goes to show you how, again, our value system's messed up, where most people go, no, we need to look after the vulnerable because it's got a benefit to the rest of us. Even if it hasn't got a benefit to the rest of us, it should be just the fundamental point of look after the vulnerable.
Mm.
But because of austerity and people starting to twist, go, right, if we do that, it's going to be the detriment of this. And, you know, GDP is going to suffer because of the amount of benefits are being drawn here. And that's why we're now, because of this crisis, having a conversation about universal basic income,
mm.
which is going to be pinned ever more up the notice board. Because you can't escape the fact that we need to look after each other.
Mm.
And this crisis has kind of started to shift us over into more of a socialist way of thinking again, which I don't think is a bad thing.
Oh, yeah. You've got people who are very conservative at the moment talking about, like you say, universal basic income, like talking about raising nurses' wages and stuff. And it's like, hey, guys, you're doing a socialism, please. Yeah. You know, stop stealing our shtick.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's from a intellectual point of view, there's a lot of really interesting shit happening around this virus. Sadly, all the death stuff kind of gets in the way of the fun of overthinking it, which is always
one way of putting it.
The human cost just spoiling our fun again, basically. You say people you work with, what do you do? Their podcast question. We did that.
So yeah, this is a weird one for me to answer because you might have it as well, is that if you wear too many hats, you don't know which one to put on when you're in a conversation.
Mm.
So I started off, the very origins of me is a musician somewhere. Mm. Over into the corner I've got here, 6 guitars, which
nice.
Represent my kind of medals of what I did out there on the scene, but that's not me anymore. That was 10, 15 years ago now. So I got a background in music and marketing through that, and I was kind of the old school, so we were still, MySpace was fairly new. So,
yeah.
You know, that kind of goes to show you that the digital age hasn't evolved yet. So we was out there on the circuit, London and Kent. You know, we did, trying to think of some of the famous ones, we did 12 Bar Club, which was sadly no longer there, in Denmark Street. But then my health gave out because I've been suffering with ME since the age of 8. And that was when drug policy started to come into my radar, because I was on a prescription legacy of codeine for years and years and years, since the age of 8. And I realised if I wanted to keep my organs, then I was going to need to do something about that. So you'd think, being a musician, I'd have an awareness of the drug scene, but I totally didn't. I was completely naive. I didn't even drink. So someone said, you know, let's get you into cannabis. So I was like, oh, don't be stupid. You know, I was growing children.
Oh, those drugs are bad.
Exactly. Just say no, because that's the easiest way.
One toke, and you were running through the streets with a knife, stabbing grannies.
Completely naked.
God, nightmarish.
We've all been there.
Oh, yeah.
and it works. It was one of those ones. I was like, whoa, this definitely works. And I've always been really boring and conservative with it, in that, you know, I don't use that much. I don't do it socially because I just don't kind of get on with that way of doing things. I'd rather just sit there and melt in front of the next Mandalorian episode or the Royal Rumble or something. So from there, I was like, well, I've got to do something about this. And that was when I started getting involved in drug policy, which, from a musician to a drug policy reformer, is quite a strange bound. And then there was this organisation called Leap UK, which was an organisation of police. So you had Undercover, MI5. And I was like, well, they're powerful. Yeah, they're the ones that are going to make a difference. So I got in contact with them. They were fairly stationary in this country, and I took them on. I got asked to be executive director. So Leap UK then started to kind of form up, and we got loads of different members now. So
because there's an American Leap that you're kind of an offshoot of originally.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, so it started in America. And it was again, big drug warriors that have been out there on the front lines, chucking in people's doors with the big red key, really harsh drug war tactics that they've been part of.
Mm.
And they went, this doesn't work. This isn't helping people. So they turned around and gone, should we do this a different way? Should we do, you know, legalization in quotation marks? And of course, back in 2000, which I think was when they roughly started, that kind of conversation was nowhere.
Mm.
You know, legalization was a very bad word. So when we started here, which was in 2010, the conversation had gone on a little bit more, but it was still very in the shadows. It was still the realms of being hippies again that was going, no, free the weed. And you just weren't taken seriously. But now in 2020, which I can't believe it is, it's really progressed to such a degree that most intelligent people tend to agree that we need legalization, regulation.
The weird thing about it as well is, although it's a fairly, I think if we were to polarize it, it is a fairly conservative idea to legislate against drug usage. Yet, weirdly, it's a fairly conservative idea to make money out of things. And it is interesting to me that we can prove, like something like weed particularly, we can prove not that it's harmless, it isn't nothing's harmless, but it's less harmful than alcohol. So we can show that, and then we can also show that it's really profitable, because all of the damage that weed does is directly linked to the crimes committed, you know, the trafficking of it. So it's like, well, yeah, you can stop crimes and make money. Surely that should be like Boris should be sitting there going, yeah, wait, stop crimes and make money? Let's do this.
If you do a thing called a cost-benefit analysis where you just look at it all, you know,
that's the word. I should have just said that. I went on for like 5 minutes.
and if Susie Gage, who is a friend of ours on the network, her book is upstairs.
I wouldn't say friends, acquaintance.
Yeah, Dr. Susie George, or Saucy George, as the hardcore listing guys call
it. Yeah, that makes me uncomfortable any time.
I think any hardcore listing thing makes me uncomfortable. I don't know about you.
Yeah, anything Stu says, like, hello, Dan. Oh, sets my teeth on
bless
it.
Him.
Hello, Stu.
As for Pod Bible, yeah, just go, let's not get started on Pod Bible, bless him. But it's one of those ones that it's just, on any metric, doesn't make sense. The war on drugs is just absolutely nonsense. And if you just strip it all away and start again, and you explain to the average person the logic of it, they get it. But what the average person hasn't been privy to until this point is just a sensible conversation, because it's been done through headlines, newspaper headlines of, you know, this drug does this, schizophrenia, this, that, and the other. So they associate harms with drugs. So why would you want to make something that's harmful legal? And that's been the linear thought process. So if you can strip that away, you tend to get a better answer.
And that conversation obviously is both getting easier and harder. Like the access, the good information is easier to find now, at the same time as the bad information is so much easier to find now. And obviously with the way in which media has to generate its revenue, like through clickbait, basically. So
yeah.
The Daily Mail have no invested interest in saying, hey, this drug does this, it's not that bad. No one's clicking that article. Man does thing isn't an exciting article, but man smokes one spliff and murders family is far more interesting.
This is the funny thing, and I don't want to single newspapers out, but it does tend to be the Daily Mail, bless them.
Yeah, it's the Daily Mail have cultivated their audience in that way. They've got their comment section driven to a point where you have the absolute rabid fanboys and the ones who want to prove them wrong and dunk on them and argue against them. So it means that they're driving double the traffic they should be. And they know how to trigger their
You're
audience.
Right, what you said, it's clickbait. Mm. If you put out a headline, and it is standardised, because if you look at the headlines, it's normally just one joint and then some salacious story underneath. So just one joint can cause schizophrenia, or just one joint can make this person go out there and sort of run around with a traffic cone in their head. We're no longer news, it's more marketing. And this is where, going back to what I do, that's where I've come in that I'm not a scientist. You know, I'm fairly sure that people like Dr. Susie Gage look at what I do and go, oh, shut up, Jason, because I just don't talk in scientific language. I'm certainly not a politician, even though I know loads now. Some are good. Some, you know, there are good politicians out there. And I'm certainly not an academic. But what I do, which I think has been a little bit different, is I've got kind of a marketing head on me, in the sense that I've been in front of audiences most of my life to one degree or another. So I tend to think in terms of how can you connect with that last person that hasn't got their bum off the seat.
Mm.
And that's where I've come into the politics and science realm and gone, right, well, I know for a fact that what that scientist is saying and what that politician is saying and that academic isn't getting across to the layman. They don't understand it. So how can you form that information into something that is marketable and that they can grasp and then take away and tell their mate? And yeah, that's where I've come into it.
Yeah, it's definitely find the reason for someone to care about it. You know, so like some people showing them the financial benefit, some people showing them the health benefit, but it's also realizing that just the facts aren't the compelling part of it. Finding how those facts influence that person to change their mind are the important thing. And it's definitely a skill that a lot of people don't have, especially in academia, because the way academia is set up is to go overboard on detail as such. So I've got a little tickle. I'm hoping it's not the Rona.
Keep that at bay, please. Can we catch it over the internet? Because if so, I need to kind of put up some kind of screen in front of me now.
Have you got Norton? Norton antivirus. Yeah,
put it around my face.
My dad would be proud of that joke. So that's what LEAP do, basically. You are a body of speakers and activists?
Yeah. So, I mean,
who know what they're talking about.
That's just one of my roles, is the LEAP role. So again, we've got people like Neil Woods, who's a former undercover officer, who's written two books, Drug Wars and Good Cop, Bad War, which I totally recommend, because if you're into true crime or line of duty or anything like that, those books will really show you what it's like to be on the front line of the drug wars. And it's just, it's brutal.
Mm.
And what Neil says, and what a lot of the undercovers that we've got under us, like we've got Frank Matthews, who was in a safe house for 6 years because he was in witness protection because of what the gangs were going to do to him. Mm. And we got Nick Castle, who had a samurai sword to his throat and was just, again, beaten on the job because of being an undercover officer. All of them come out the other side of this saying, well, that didn't work. And what we've done is we've just made the lives of the vulnerable even worse.
Mm.
So what can we do to go about that? And so the simple solutions are heroin-assisted treatment. So if you've got a heroin addiction, chances are you didn't want to get that way. It might have been through childhood trauma or physical trauma or mental trauma. So let's create a prescription for you where you don't have to source it off the streets. It's a very simple process that works. And the coronavirus has proved it. So because things are very different in the world at the moment, you know, we've got social distancing, what the government have done is they pushed legislation through really quickly of you can get methadone prescriptions really easily. You don't have to go back every week to get them. And they've trusted people to sort of manage their own addictions and dependencies.
Mm.
That's what we're just are calling for, is just let people have an autonomy within their situation, because the average person doesn't want to die. So if you create safety nets for them, we have a healthier society, because they don't have to source it off the street. And it means that they're getting a purer substance that isn't going to kill them and isn't going to put, in quotation marks, a drain on the services, even though
I guarantee, like, the last thing shoots up by the bin just around the back of my house, she doesn't want to be there. Yeah. I guarantee her crouched behind a bin, well, multiple bins, it's a few houses' bins, like her climbing back there and shooting up. I just can't see it, that being her. You know what? Today, I'm going to shoot up behind some bins. Yeah. That's definitely what I want to be doing with my life.
And that's another thing we can do is we've got drug consumption more bins. Rooms. We definitely need more bins around here. I won't get you started on the bins here, but there's a whole bin war that happens in my road.
Oh, nice.
One didn't get taken the other day because there was too much soil in it. And yeah, the brown bins aren't getting collected. But I mean,
how many different bins you got?
We've got three. So we've got blue, brown, green, and I have not got a food bin yet, but they do exist.
Wait, what? We've only got two.
Really?
We have just trash and recycling, and you can't recycle half the things you can recycle. Like, all the things that say you can recycle them, they're like, yoghurt pots, fuck you. I ain't taking... You put one yoghurt pot in your bin, they won't take any of it.
Oh my word, this is a whole other ball game.
You have to, like, dig through and make sure you haven't accidentally put a Tetra pack in there.
I did see someone take a picture of someone's inner bin the other day, and I wasn't sure where that picture was going. I think there must be some kind of board of shame somewhere that...
Yeah, there's a Facebook group, I guarantee it. Oh, look at Dave's bin. Oh, he hasn't rinsed that out with a hose. Well, sorry, some of us can't afford hoses.
But genuinely, though, the bin men, they're doing a massive, brilliant service at the moment, and we are going to thank ours that come round because they have done such a good job because they're not getting the right protection gear. They're keeping our sort of system running. So genuinely, bin men, you're up there. You're definitely doing what...
How do we keep that momentum of will, of goodwill, going in 2 months' time when everyone's running around in the sun?
I'm hoping that we've got longer memories than what the recent past has showed us, because this has happened before where you get momentum going and then it falls down to the fiscal argument again. And this is where we were saying just a moment ago that finance and money isn't a chemical element we need. We need oxygen, we need water, we need food, we need sunlight. When they run out, we're truly screwed. You know, this is kind of Close Encounters of the Third Kind level buggered. Money, there's ways we can do it. You know, we can problem solve that in whatever way. We can create new industries. So I'm hoping that we're not going to boil this all down to a financial argument at the end of this, because there's every chance that we will, because that's what we do in this country. We put that above all else. And we need to have longer memories of what people have done for us, how you can create these unity movements, which is, they've been growing for a long time, because I think that we're going to edge ever closer to the left and right spectrums, because polarisation tends to happen when you've got this stagnant middle ground. And because we've been in the centre ground for a fair while, that's why they're
decades.
Kind of...
It feels like decades at this point.
I mean, probably since, even before Blair, you could probably argue that we went centre. And now you had the Corbyn movement, and you've got in America the Bernie Sanders movement, both of which have had their knocks and been quashed. And by no means, you know, am I endorsing any politician within this. It's just an interesting thing to watch of how we have moved to the left and right. And that's why you do get the birth of Trump. And chances are, I mean, I don't want to predict it, but he's probably getting in next time because of what? Biden just isn't really a nice alternative.
Like, his health does not look good. I know I'm not a doctor and all that, those usual caveats, not assuming people are going to die. But, like, I cannot see how any American is going to go to the polls and look at Biden and think, yeah, he's going to be around for 8 more years. He's definitely our guy. The only way Biden wins, in my opinion, is if he brings in the right, young, energetic running mate. But, like, the one that might swing it for him would be Liz Warren. But I can't see her giving up her shot 4 more years down the line to be his vice president, you know?
And this is where the internal systems bite the national narratives on the arse, because this is what happened within the Labour Party here and what happens in the Democratic Party there, is that they go through their own systems, even though it's supposed to be open to outside votes and the sort of the union votes and that lot, it still goes down the same lines as what they want to nudge it down.
Yeah.
And it happened with Hillary. She was not going to be a viable alternative. she was always going to be polarisation. They wanted to get the first female president, which is completely fine and we should. But she was not a popular candidate. Mm. So they shot themselves in the foot by pushing for that at the detriment of natural movements.
It's that thing of there were so many little meaningless things that were really catchphrasy. Like the butthurt emails thing. Just like it meant that Trump supporters could make noise that wasn't very easy to argue against. This is the thing about the way the internet works. We're kind of just rambling, which is fine. Arguments on the internet, you have to remember you're not arguing with the person you're talking to.
Yeah.
And they're not arguing with you. You're both performing this argument to the audience. And what works with an audience is quippy, short dunks on a person, not 14 tweet threads explaining why that person's wrong, getting into the nuance of why her emails should or shouldn't matter, or Benghazi or whatever, just looks like you're losing. You know, even if you're being the great liberal intelligentsia, you look like you're losing, and they get to go, lol, yeah, her emails, oh, you got nothing to say on that. And yeah, it's that thing of for someone to win, there you either have to make so much noise that the bullshit gets drowned out by your noise, or they have to be the purest of pure with nothing they can throw at them. And what happened with Corbyn was, no matter what good he has done in the past, it was just so easy to go, ha, IRA, innit? It didn't matter that other people had met the same members of the IRA as him. You could just show a picture of him with whoever and go, ha, there you go, IRA, innit? And he loses.
You've hit upon a point that I always say. If I'm speaking to a new member of Leak that's coming up, that I want to get him a little bit media savvy, I always say to him, remember that the debate is a spectator sport, because you're not doing it to the individual, you're playing to the crowd.
Yeah.
And that's why you do need to be aware of your conduct. You need to be aware of not sinking to ad hominems, which can quite often come out, because that's basically how Corbyn lost
favour. Listeners, in debate talk, that's insults, okay?
Yeah, don't attack the man. Play the ball, not the man.
Don't use logical fallacies.
Yes, yeah.
Yes.
Although,
I don't know what that is. There's 42 different logical fallacies or something. There's loads, yeah. I watched a video about all the different, like, straw mans and all this, and I was like, oh, this is really interesting. Instantly forgot it all.
Yeah, so straw man, it basically, if you've got like a wicker man, hold a flame to an argument, it goes up in flames really quickly. So something that's built upon a tissue of lies, that's a straw man. And there's so many different things. And I've learned all this the hard way. I just went out there, just as the same as in the gig circuit, I went out with a guitar, sung on stage, died for some, flourished for others. It's the same in this realm. I've gone out there, had no training whatsoever, felt my way through it, made a mess of some areas, had success in other ways. And that's where I always bang on about the fact that this isn't politics, this is marketing. And that's where, I mean, going back to kind of all my other hats, one of the projects that I'm most fond of is on Amazon Prime as we speak, called a documentary called Culture High. This is how me and Pip met, our mutual friend Scroobius Pip.
I've heard of him, the podcaster.
Yeah, he's got a beard, I think, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, beards are cool.
Yeah, mine did grow.
Oh, that's a beard. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of more kind of. I've gone for more of a. I was going to say Shawn Michaels.
I just thought you were using one of those like Snapchat filters. I didn't realise.
Oh, I must admit, I did delve into Snapchat for about a day, and I did like this big sailor one. I'm like, no, I'm out. I can't be doing with this, because this is far too much for a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
I can see. I'm thinking maybe I do need to get a Snapchat. But then I'm like,
Snapchat I don't bother with. I think Snapchat you have to have a bit, like, if you have to have a bit of a group of people for it to be fun, you know, and maybe you need a few people on there you can enjoy. I can imagine like Chris and Stu and their listeners having fun on Snapchat. But yeah, no. TikTok, I like TikTok.
You see, I don't understand that. It looks like a load of teens gyrating.
Right. Remember, did you ever Vine? Do you remember Vine?
Yeah, vaguely, yeah.
So it's just Vine,
but okay.
With music. Yeah, so Vine went down, And then another website came in called Musical.ly, which was doing lip syncs to music clips. And it was really easy to grab the audio from one clip and redo it. And TikTok is that taken to the nth degree. The way memes work, obviously things develop so fast. So like the moment one girl decided, you know what, I'm going to do a lip sync to my shitty ex-boyfriend's voicemail, then everyone sees it and goes and does it, and then people iterate. And I like watching TikTok. I would never create a TikTok.
About Kick, I don't understand Kick. Is that just another messenger service?
I think Kick's, yeah, but like you can pay for access.
Oh, I think one Kick, of those, yeah.
Yeah, I associate Kick with my dominatrix friends or my sex worker friends, because I think it's a pay for access messaging. I might be wrong, listeners. Please correct me.
Yeah, please inform us, because I'm now officially middle aged, I think.
We're getting distracted.
We are. Yeah, so where was I?
Documentaries. You've worked on a couple of documentaries. See, I'm going to lead you into... I'm not editing any of this, so they know we just got distracted. I might have been...
So you're a total pro.
I try. Documentaries.
So I've worked on loads, but there's two that I've got producer credit for, and that's Grassroots, the Cannabis Revolution, which is on, it was on Amazon Prime, I'm pretty sure it still is, which is a domestic look at cannabis people that have had to pour their life into activism, and it's directed by Dale Beaumont Brown, who's a great guy, and it's just, it maps out what activists have to do, and it's, if you have got... Most people are lucky that they don't have a cause that they got to fight. You know, they may sit there and grumble out the window, but every so often something comes along where you actually have to properly fight the system. And this is one of those examples that, you know, people with MS, people with Crohn's, people that just can't walk are having to go to the government and say, you know, we're not criminals. We're trying to do something.
This thing, it's definitely not, for a lot of people, it's not about getting stoned. A lot of the time it is about pain relief.
I must admit, I'm the same. I don't particularly like getting a heady high, because it just doesn't work for me. So I'm more, you know, please just take this body pain away. And that's where you get, I mean, now most people know what CBD is. But back 10 years ago, no one had a clue. So when we were, people in that fraternity were growing strains that are high CBD or were, you know, just bona fide CBD strains, most people were like, what are you on about? You know, it's weed, all weed's the same. But now CBD's a bloody high street product. The evolution has been really interesting to watch.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, I think it is that thing of over time, we do progress towards progression. Mm. Like, there is a point in the world where, you think about it, like, my dad wouldn't know, I wouldn't accept the idea that gay men existed probably 40 years ago, yet my mum will sit there and watch Drag Race now. You know, there is progression there. And he might not get Drag Race. What are they doing? Why are they doing that? There's a lot of that goes on. But at the same time, like, he's moved from 40 years ago where we would have been like, what the fuck, to some level of acceptance. And I think that happens with most things in life. We gradually, as it touches our lives or we're just shown that it exists, we go, oh, that's a thing that exists, rather than thing bad.
And that's where the word normalization, you know,
again,
after a while,
that whole conversation there, I could have just said, yeah, it's been normalized.
It's true. It gets to the point where society just doesn't care, because it's just so integrated. I mean, you probably know it, but there's a great book and film called Pride, which looks at what the gay community and what the miners that were on strike at the time in the early 80s, when they got together to form a movement. And that's everything, you know, what we've kind of talked about within the last half hour. Blimey, 37 minutes.
It's because I talk so much.
I can't believe it. I just looked around and I was like, that's gone.
It just happens.
And that's what the movements are. It's like, get that pocket. We've got a mutual cause somewhere. Let's form up a spear, not a literal one, but you know, a phalanx, and get together and put a movement out.
This is why, like, shit posters will mock them for it, but this is why LGBT has gone LGBT plus or LBTQIA plus. You know, like, because that's different groups of people who have intersecting issues in life, and they form together because together they can fight for a cause, you know.
And that's what you find in these movements, and that's what that documentary Grassroots was about. And then the other one that I worked on, which got Oscar longlisted, which is just, again, mental. And every time I have an argument with my other half, I bring up the fact that I won an Oscar, and then that's morphed into I've won two Oscars, and then I'm fairly sure I'm up for a third this year, but it got cancelled, so I should have won a third. And it's more of a global overview of what the war on drugs has done. So it goes into the fact that people have messed around with the notion of addiction and what it is, as opposed to, you know, treating it scientifically and compassionately. How big pharma, you know, let's wheel that term out there, you know, plays a part. And so there's big tobacco funding comes into this massively. The Drug Enforcement Agency in America, the DEA, which is pretty much what every single Netflix cop drama is based on.
Yeah.
They would not be in existence without the war on drugs. So, in just to give a very, very quick brief history, so Prohibition in America in the 20s, that was when alcohol was outlawed. Was when the...
So, listeners, Boardwalk Empire era.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So, you've done it to me. You summarised perfectly there. that era, that was when the mafia started to form up, and all of these organised crime groups really started to skyrocket. Al Capone, yeah, mm-hmm. That was where he formed up. So the American government formed up the DEA to combat that. Well, then alcohol prohibition was repealed.
It was like eight years as well. It wasn't a long period of time.
It was a long battle. You know, that was where the Untouchables came in. You know, it was a proper blood battle. So then you had this agency, this government agency that was there, funded, needed more funding, but with nothing to do. So that's when they turned their attention to the war on drugs. And we've still got that now. So this is all about funding streams of how can we keep these totem poles propped up with some degree of, you know, the boogeyman. Drugs are a boogeyman. This cartel is a boogeyman.
Yeah, instead of actually looking at that organization and going, well, okay, we don't need you. Or maybe you would be better served if you were trying to deal with homelessness and the causes of that, or something that could actually directly help human beings. We're still gonna, I suppose it is partly the politics of fear. It's far easier to get money out of someone when you say, look, everyone's gonna die, you know, everyone's lives are gonna be ever so slightly better.
It's marketing all over again, and the governments do it all the time. They quite often, there's a great interview in the Culture High with a professor called Alex Stevens, who's the University of Kent down by me, and he works in the civil service for a long time. And he says in the film that quite often it's easier to justify a policy and back it up as opposed to creating a policy and then finding the evidence.
Mm.
Or it might be the other way around. I've probably done a disservice to that quote. But basically saying, you know, come up with the idea, then we'll form up something, as opposed to looking at the evidence and working out a policy from that point.
Yeah.
That's probably an easier way of putting it. And it's true. That's exactly what we do. And that's
it's far easier to say, hey, let's leave Europe and give $350 million to the NHS a week, to actually then check that number. Oh, wait, that's not even possible. Fuck. You know. Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's what we do. That's government is, they can't, tend to have an idea of what they want to do, and then they justify the behaviour as opposed to going, right, well, let's be methodical within this. So that's the other facet that I've got, is the documentary making. And it's something I really enjoy, because you get to meet, on that film, on the Culture High, we work with Snoop Dogg, we work with Wiz Khalifa.
Heard of both of those.
I was sat in Richard Branson's home falling asleep while he was being interviewed.
He's very boring.
And all lovely house though. who else did we have? Rufus Hound, I'm sure you know.
Heard of him.
He was working on it with us, and we had this like big red carpet premiere in Piccadilly Circus, and it's a standout memory for me, is that when this is all over and I've broken my back, which is probably quite literal, that I've got these moments of red carpet premiere with a nice film. There are nice moments you can have in activism, despite the fact that 99% of it is just bat-breaking work for not just me, obviously, but for so many people out there who are trying to do this.
Yeah, I find it really interesting, because I think to be able to be an activist is a somewhat privileged position. to be able to have the free time or enough money to go off and do it. And I think sometimes that people forget that there is like a true human cost to the issues we're talking about. And you're coming from a place of, with ME, you've had fucking woe. You've had your trial and tribulation, and you're coming at your Activision from a personal point of view, which I don't know, just I find far more interesting, far more compelling. You know, yes, it's not like you're trying to get them to legalize weed so you can get stoned, but you are trying to get people to think differently about drug policy so that people like yourself, people with Crohn's disease, can live a better life. And that's the point of existence, isn't it? To leave the planet in a better spot than when you joined it, you know?
And it's quite interesting what you say about activism, because I've got a very different perspective in the sense that, I mean, it's completely what you say is completely legitimised, in that quite often it is a privilege to be an activist because you do get to work and meet brilliant people. But the realms that I work in, most times it's purely hardship that are driving people. So, prime example, I work with big networks of people who have been abused as a child, have got nothing. They are scratching for a living, or probably had their benefits taken off of them. They've got nothing, and yet they're still pouring everything into trying to make the world a better place, not just for them, but for everybody. And it's so humbling when you get to meet those people. There's a guy that I know called Nigel Brunston, who is...
Hi, Nigel, if you're listening.
He's trying to network people at the moment because of what this pandemic is doing, how it's creating a lot of people out there that, you know, might lose their lives because of either potentially suicide, or purely they haven't got the resources to keep themselves going. So he's trying to make sure that people are kept mentally healthy, also getting services into them, you know, if they do need medication or if they do need food. You know, most people that are putting everything into this have literally got nothing. And it is just, it really does redefine your existence when you're around that kind of person.
It actually leads to that. Like, why have we got to this point where we think social justice is a bad thing? Like, you're bad for caring about other people. It seems really odd.
Yeah. It's strange the way that we twisted our logic around, that compassion has almost been rationed. It's almost as if, you know, well, we can sort a certain amount of disabled benefits over here, but we've got to kind of not give the nurses a pay rise because, you know, we've got to make sure we still look after the economy. And it's just, if you look after people first, the rest does tend to take care of itself, which I know is going to sound really left-wing to a lot of people. But I generally don't put myself on any of the spectrum. I think I would vote for anybody that's going to, you know, say what I want to hear. And that is just look after people, let's not put money as the bottom line, and have a community and a society that functions. And we're having that conversation at the moment because of the pandemic. And as you said, you made the point of how can we carry that on and continue it. And that's where we are going to, probably all of us going to have to be an activist to some degree or another, to make sure that when we're out there clapping on our doorstep for the NHS, you translate that to the ballot box. Don't just superficially do it and go, right, okay, we've looked after them because we've given them applaudit. Make sure you vote for the people that are going to be looking after them, or hold the people to account that haven't. That's how you translate it.
But yeah, it is that thing of we are given these really small ways to signal our virtue, that we care about the NHS and stuff. And it is that thing of, well, what are you actually doing? And I actually get really frustrated because I don't think we should be giving money for people to make their own PPE, or we should be giving money to charities to feed the NHS if we had a working government. Like, we're paying tax, and if businesses were paying tax, and if people weren't avoiding tax who were in the position to do so, then we wouldn't have to be raising money on the side for nurses to be fed, or all of that stuff. It shouldn't be a thing. And although I am deeply proud of the people who are putting together these charities or just funding drives to make sure that people can feed their kids or whatever, they shouldn't have to. That's the frustration, and it's finding the ways to make sure that we don't ever have to do that again.
This is the bizarre thing about spin. Media spin exists, and political spin definitely exists, because you've only got to look at food banks as an example. In the last couple of years, the incredible services that the food banks are putting out, and the really altruistic nature of society that are putting things into a basket for a food bank, it's been heralded as a success. But the very notion of a food bank is the absolute epitome of a failure of a healthy society.
Yeah.
So, and that spin for you. We shouldn't have food banks, and yet the fact that they're doing a massively brilliant job for us is heralded as a good thing.
Mm.
That doesn't weigh up.
Yeah, the good thing would be that we don't need food banks anymore because everyone's fed. You know, it's really interesting actually, because I didn't realize. So my mum's shielded, so she's obviously totally not allowed to leave her flat and stuff. But she actually gets a food parcel off the government, and it was like that's what the government are meant to do. If she goes outside, she dies. That's where she's at. You know, she has all of the underlying conditions plus a few more. You know, so. Our government has gone, right, well, if she goes outside and gets coronavirus, she's dead. All right, let's make sure she's not dead. And that's what your government's job should be.
Mm.
Not some of you are going to have to die so that this guy can have his dividends. Sorry. Sorry, guys. There's nothing we can do, you know.
And this is, for me, where it's a privilege of doing, and I'm going to work in a quick plug here, but this is why it's a privilege to do the Stop and Search podcast that I do. Because you manage to get those conversations and broadcast them. Because, you know, what we do on Stop and Search is we talk about drug policy, but it's so much more than that. You know, it's more about the social issues because drug policy isn't just about drugs. It's about poverty. It's about domestic abuse. It's about addiction. It's about, you know, finances and the global economy. So when we get people on like Tom Wainwright from The Economist that can talk about global economies and how it functions because of the war on drugs and what it's at the detriment of, it's really fascinating. And also we get MPs that, you know, again, not all MPs are bastards because, you know, they do get labelled as such. I've worked with good ones, I've worked with bad ones. We've gone into Parliament and done podcasts live in Parliament, which
the
is
the first ever podcast recording.
I think
in Parliament.
It was, yeah.
Which I texted not really... me that, so I wrote it down.
Really? Yeah. Oh my God, have you been doing some kind of like fact finding on me?
I do research. I've written stuff down. We just haven't like said any of it. I even wrote down the pronunciation of ME.
Oh, go for it. Try it.
Myalgic encephalomyelitis. No, encephalomyelitis. Yeah,
that's better than what I can do. Because even now, after 30 years, I just mumble my way through it. I'm like, my algic.
Yeah,
that'll do.
Encephalomyelitis. There we go.
I've been given an illness I can't even pronounce.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass, isn't it? it's like I don't know whose joke it is. It's probably a Bob Monkhouse joke, but it's like really cruel that they gave dyslexics that name. Like, guys, come on.
Yeah, all those
we can't
X's
deal with that. Rodney Dangerfield, that's a Rodney Dangerfield joke.
Although I think any Bob Monkhouse quote is a good one, even if it's false.
Even if it's somebody else's. Yeah. Dangerfield was is it Rodney Dangerfield? Yeah, he was in like Caddyshack and all that.
Yeah.
He was properly like depressing comedian. Everything was like pretty bleak in his humor. He's like, my dad said to me one time, stop running around in circles or I'll nail your other foot to the floor. You know, like that sort of joke. He's like properly had a joke for everything, but it was, I don't know, like that proper like self-deprecating, not even self-hating humor. But yeah,
quite often the dark comics are the ones that are more often than not the ones making the good points.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I don't know if we can include Bob Monkhouse in that, bless him.
Bob Monkhouse, like, I always think of, like, Jimmy Carr is the dirty Bob Monkhouse.
That should be his bio. That is Jimmy Carr's Twitter bio.
Because they both have that same, like, encyclopedic knowledge of jokes. It's just that, you know,
they can rattle them off.
Yeah, but if Bob Monkhouse was born now, he would be Jimmy Carr. He wouldn't be have to be nice because to get on TV, because you can say poop and willy and stuff on TV now. Knockers. I heard someone say knockers the other day.
Knockers.
Yeah, or honkers. I don't know what. That's geese. No, yeah, that's there geese.
Was,
sorry.
I probably shouldn't do this, but can you remember the word wabs? That was out for a little
wabs,
while.
Waps? Yeah. I remember waps. People say that.
I can't believe we've gone down this route. That's a quick retreat.
My favourite. We can go off. My favourite breast word is norks.
Yes, norks. That's quite old-fashioned, isn't it? But it's had a bit of a comeback.
Yeah, well, because I think of it as Rick Mayall and Ade Edmondson in Bottom, you know. And, for some reason, I just like it. Norks. It's got a less sexual connotation to it. It's like the existence of a thing rather than, I don't know.
Have you followed the people that have just recently found Bottom? Like the sort of the... I don't, what are we on? Are we technically boomers or are we generation
How old
X?
Are you?
I'm 40.
I'm 41 and I'm Gen X. I'm the edge of Gen X.
So whatever the next generation after us are, they've just recently started finding Bottom and finding it really offensive.
So it depends how you break it up. They can be Gen Z. So you have Gen Y and Gen Z, or you can wrap Gen Y into Gen X as a bigger group, and then Gen Z is millennials.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I think it's millennials then. They're just
millennials. Yeah.
They've just recently found Bottom, and
it's genius.
And I've watched it back recently, and there are a few things in there that really don't hold up, but it's
yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be that person if like it's of its time because you know that never looks good on you. But it is of its time because at the time when it came out, I was about 14, I think, and I loved it, and I still do because of the nostalgia of it. But I can see why it wouldn't necessarily hold up, even though I love Rick Mayall and I love Ade Edmondson.
But it's weird with Bottom and the young ones when they are still coming from a very like socially democratic kind of place. There is still, even when they get things wrong by today's standards, they're coming from a nice place. So it's not as hateful. But like when you go back to Friends, which is a decade or more later, and they do a shitty trans joke, it can only ever come from that big budget American TV place and feel horrible for it because you know that joke was only ever written for money. It wasn't written for any passion, you know. And you haven't got Alexi Sayle rocking up in Friends.
And with Bottom, it tends to be the jokes on them because they're the horrible people.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah.
So you've got that self-awareness of the fact that, you know, like you said, the joke isn't on the victim, it's on the people that are the perpetrators.
You are meant to like them, but you're also meant to pity them.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm.
Yeah.
At the time, I found Bottom a weird series because it felt a bit dirty. but that's the same thing I like about it now. It's just, and like you said, the young ones. Tragically, me and my brother used to get a cassette recording and take the audio and just hold up our cassette and record the audio so that we could listen to it back because we didn't have a video recorder.
Yeah.
That's how old we are. So.
Those were the days, man. Plugs. Like, we've really, listeners, we've meandered dramatically. This is probably the least formed podcast we've done, but it's fine. We're on the phone. It's like a phone call, isn't it? So things you need to plug. What, you know what we haven't talked about? The fucking reason we did the podcast. The whole reason why we did this podcast.
Yes, I mean, that's the thing. Is like we've known each other for a good like 2 years now. We've never properly spoken.
So this is, yeah.
So we've just had basically a voyeuristic phone call with people going, right, what are they on about now?
Right, because people don't listen to all the way to the end. What I'm going to do is, listeners, this next bit, we're actually saying goodbye to you now, but this next bit we record, you'll find this out if you listen this far, is going to be right at the start, yeah? So he gets to plug the thing that he's meant to be plugging, okay? So we'll see you later, and we'll continue talking, okay?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So, how was that for you guys? Genuinely appreciate Jason coming on. He's a really nice man. And he's done a lot. He's done a lot. Documentary, film, producer, I think is the correct term. Been in bands and stuff. We learned loads there. And we didn't even hear his cool Tron story. If you want that, you have to go listen to Hardcore Listing with Chris and Stu. Because he's on that. He's on the Distraction Pieces Network. I don't know. Did I say that at the start? Probably not, because I'm an idiot. And I'm not professional. I'm also out of breath. How am I out of breath? I'm just standing still in my house. Standing, yes. I do it standing so I don't ramble. And now I'm rambling. Thanks, guys. Ruined it. I hope, genuinely hope everyone's okay as well. This is a career ender for a lot of people. This is a very, very difficult time for a lot of people. And I'm not just talking about us creative wanks. I'm talking about real people with real jobs. So I genuinely hope you're staying safe and we get through this as quickly as possible so we can all get back to some level of normality. Although if you listen to Jason's podcast with me, you'll realise that my normality is hermit-like. I did not realise how messed up my own life is, but we'll fix that. If you did enjoy the podcast, obviously hit up patreon.com/DanaSack, grab some music from danasack.bandcamp.com, do all those things, tweet about it, all makes a massive difference. Although I do this as a hobby, I can't help but dream of a day where I could support myself with it. Never gonna happen. But, you know, that's fine. And you have a lovely day, and I'll see you in a fortnight. Enjoy.